Kentucky Congressman Thomas Massie's loss to challenger Ed Gowrine made national and international news. But he wasn't the only established Northern Kentucky Republican to lose in the primary last week. Two longtime judge executives also lost to challengers. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Joining me now to discuss what the results mean for the Northern Kentucky GOP and the region are FBT Gibbons' partner and former Kentucky Secretary of State, Trey Grayson, and president and founder of Roebling Solutions and chair of the Kenton County Republican Party, Shane Nome. Thank you both for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Glad to be here, Lucy.
So, Trey, let's start with the 4th Congressional District, where, as I mentioned, Congressman Massie lost to challenger Ed Gowrine. Was this all about President Trump's endorsement of Gowrine and opposition to Massie?
It was more complicated than that. I mean, if you have to zero it in on one thing, sure. I mean, some of the other reasons or factors at play, Massie had, through his style of politics, obviously antagonized the president with his kind of libertarian willingness to go alone. But that had also antagonized some folks locally. A lot of business leaders were frustrated by his approach. For example, he wasn't a champion for the funding for the Brent Spence Bridge Companion Project. And that had been a kind of a sore spot for a number of years. Also, local Republican leaders. Shane was, I think you were technically neutral in this race.
I was neutral.
Right? Shane was neutral. So
he
not Shane.
Very quickly.
But there were other local Republican leaders who had been frustrated with Massie because he tried to take over parties. He backed challengers to incumbents. So that also antagonized the business community. So Gowrine was the first candidate that allowed all of those to come together along with the president and the president's support. And so that's why when I was talking to the national reporters, and one day I literally talked to 3 New York Times reporters on the same day about this race, was, yeah, you're going to cover it with the Trump-Massie framework, and that's not wrong, and that's certainly how it's going to be covered, you know, impacted across the country. But there were these other elements to it as well. And if it had been a very, very close race, without those other elements, Massie doesn't lose.
Shane, weigh in on that, because, you know, Congressman Massie did back challengers who defeated Republican lawmakers, state lawmakers, who had a lot of clout in Frankfort. Do you think that really worked against him?
I think it did. I think there were a lot of political missteps over the course of his 14 years in office. And, you know, just coming in the way he did with Senator Paul, Thomas Massie, this libertarian vein coming out of the 08 Tea Party era, you had this kind of alignment and some cover. And so he could act nationally in his more libertarian way and then act a little more non-traditional locally. But it eventually caught up with him as the party evolves and changes over time. And I think, you know, I similarly had a lot of out-of-state and out-of-country reporters reaching out. And they're like, what makes Northern Kentucky different? Why are you so out of the box and so different? We're not. And I think that's what showed on Tuesday. We're a regular Republican congressional district. And just had this alignment of 2 libertarian candidates that made it feel like, and as they're pushing lower into lower races, they really stretched their political operation too thin. And Congressman Massie made himself very vulnerable and was ultimately taken out by a pretty sizable margin.
Well, during his concession speech, Congressman Massie talked about the youth vote and how younger voters really supported him. I don't know if either of you watched that concession speech. It was an interesting one. It kind of went differently than a lot of concession
speeches. There were some other elements of that speech.
Yeah, there were other elements. Have either of you seen a breakdown on kind of the demographics of voters in this race? Have you seen any numbers to back up what he was talking about there?
Well, I saw the polling early on, and I think it reflected what happened on Election Day. And it's the old adage in politics is older people vote in higher frequency. Younger people don't.
Younger people, especially in primaries.
Younger people are more idealistic and ideologues and pushing to the more out-of-the-box disruptive. But then over time, you have to realize you have to govern. You have to kind of pick a team. You can't just register as a third party. You have to pick one or the other if you want to have a say in the primaries. And so I think these natural things came into play where, sure, I'm sure he had a lot of younger support. But a dear friend of mine told me, if I had voted, I would have voted for Massie. Why didn't you vote? Well, I got caught up with this and this, and it just wasn't important, and I just moved here. I think that all fits into young people's perspective in life, and it just really didn't play out.
Yeah, You got to vote if you want to say and how it all turns out, right?
Yeah.
Well, we are talking about the results of the Kentucky primary and what they mean for the Northern Kentucky Republican Party. Do you have questions or comments? Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. We did get an email from Robert in Newport. Robert writes, as a Kentucky 4th Congressional District Republican voter, if Massey lost by a point or two, then I would accept it was all the money. It was a blowout. Massey lost because he stopped meeting the needs of his constituents and was chasing likes on Facebook and X, and he was enjoying being interviewed on cable TV news shows, ignoring the voters who got him into Congress in the first place. What do y'all think about that?
Robert, I think, picks up on something else. You know, Shane and I mentioned a couple of the causes. Victory, you know, loss has number, you have lost number of causes, right? The cause of loss. One aspect of this was that Massey, up until this race, did sort of have this aloofness at the local level. He didn't do as much as you might expect. Some of that's, he lives in Lewis County. He doesn't live in the heart of the district. He certainly, it's hard to get to the Jefferson County, Louisville suburbs. It's a long drive from where he lives. So some of this is just the nature of the district. But he didn't do as much of that, which is unfortunate because he does have a great personality. When you're around him, you like him. Mm-hmm. And he did lean into that during the campaign. It was interesting because he was the incumbent during the campaign, going to more events, doing more media, leaning into in his commercials, talking to the camera. Gowrine didn't do that stuff. Normally the challengers do. But it was a little, it was too little, too late. And so I think Robert picks up on one of those trends. The last part about doing all the social media and likes, I'll give him a little grace on this because he's a human being and I'm sure he loved the attention. When you're one of 435, it is hard to get attention. And it would be natural that you would like the attention. And a lot of how you communicate with voters today is through these social media vehicles because you now have the ability to do that. This is a sea change from when I was in office in the 2000s.
Certainly where the president does that.
Yeah. So, yeah. So I do think he picks up on an important aspect of this was he'd gotten a little bit distance from his district constituents, and that exacerbated some of the things we talked about earlier.
I think you're 100% right, and I'll say Massey is a lot of fun. He's a really nice guy. Years ago, when I was in the Young Republicans, he would come around and do this bowling with the congressman event. And first off, he's a heck of a bowler. But it was just fun to be around him in that casual atmosphere. He'd do an axe throwing event with us. So, like, he's genuinely a nice guy. The other thing I want to talk about is the money side of things. There's a lot of talk about how much money was spent, $30 million. Not all of that $30 million was spent against Congressman Massey. Last count I saw was $18 million to $13 million. I mean, that's pretty comparable when you're talking about, you know, the president, of course, is going to give you an edge in fundraising. So there's the difference of the $5 million. But Massey wasn't running a shoestring operation. There were serious resources filling up my mailbox and my phone on his behalf, as well as Gowrine's.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't lose because he got outspent. He lost because the money backed a better message in this race. And part of that message was, this is Trump's candidate, and part of this message, you know, but he did not get outspent. The number of calls and texts and mailers and commercials, I mean, yes, factually he got outspent, but that's not why he lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, one more question about Congressman Massey. The supporters at his concession speech were so riled up. I was watching it live from home and just the energy there. It's like they almost, it seemed like they didn't realize he lost. You know, they were so excited. Any guesses as to whether he will reenter politics in some way?
Well, over the weekend, he filed an intent to raise money in the 2028 election cycle with the FEC. Now, that doesn't mean he's actually running, and that can mean you just mean you're raising money for a federal office. That could be the United States Senate. It could be president. But it allows him to raise money. There's some practical reasons for that. He needs money to go continue to pay for travel and some of the political aspects of it. He also, as you mentioned, there's a lot of followers who are still really enthusiastic about him. So it's a chance to capitalize on some of that. I think the one thing about that audience that struck me is it reminded me that Massey and Rand, you know, always made their supporters feel like they were part of something bigger. President Trump has this too. And most politicians don't have that. You know, Ed Gowrine didn't have that. But Thomas's supporters did. So even though they lost, they were all part of this Team Massey effort. And it does keep him viable into the future. You know, that you can, it's not uncommon for seats to flip back and forth. We saw this in Indiana, a seat right across from Louisville every 2 years would flip back and forth. And it's not clear that the Trump endorsement and the Trump money will be there as much in 2 years. Gowron will have a voting record. Massey may look better not being in office. So it'll, but yeah, he filed that over the weekend. We were, Chain and I were in some text chains talking about this over the weekend. And then we're all kind of like, oh, wow, like this one just ended. Now we're ready for another one.
Huh. Wow. Anything you want to add to that, Shane?
Yeah, no, I think we're going to, you know, see things simmer down more and more as time goes on. He's made it very clear, even after that filing went out, look, I did this for practical reasons. I haven't decided what, if anything, I'm going to run for. So he's got some time. And look, he's still in office for 6 months. Yeah. You know, there is a Democrat that's filed for the seat and, you know, nobody expects her to be a serious contender. But he's got a long runway to make a lot of points on the floor. So we'll see what he decides to do to speak to the national audience. I had a friend of mine on a flight from DCA, and there were three people on that flight on Monday night before the election, all wearing Massey t-shirts. So that crowd, while it was a raucous and it felt like a big hometown hero vibe, there were so many people that came in from out of state to be at that rally and to be close to him. And they didn't knock doors. There were a few that did, but they were just there to be a part of the excitement. And that's why it kind of felt like a pep rally.
The other part of Massey's future that can't be discounted is the governor's race next year in Kentucky. He has actually said publicly, not in depth, but he's not dismissed interest in potentially running for governor. So now he'll be out of office. So he would have more time to focus on that. So that's another possibility to think about. So we'll see. I mean, I don't think we've heard the last of Thomas Massey, and I say that I'm confident he'll probably run for something again. I don't think he's going to be content with sort of setting back and being a kingmaker or an influence maker, that sort of thing.
He's still pretty young.
Yeah, yeah. He's like a year. What is he? I'm 54. He's 55, 56, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, he's younger than I am.
Yeah. I joke. He and I met. We were on an academic team, a state academic team competition against Indiana. We were both, I shouldn't use past tense. I know Shane will say, you're still a nerd. Thomas and I were both nerds, but we destroyed Indiana in that competition. He was on the science team. I was on the social studies team.
Yeah. Well, he went to MIT and you went to Harvard. So there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we will continue our conversation after a short break and later in the program, helping students across Ohio get access to musical instruments. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're back with our discussion of the Kentucky primary results and what they mean for the Northern Kentucky Republican Party. My guests are president and founder of Roebling Solutions and chair of the Kenton County Republican Party, Shane Nome, and FBT Gibbons partner and former Kentucky Secretary of State, Trey Grayson. You can join the conversation. Call 513-419-7100, or you can email talk@wvxu.org. Let's talk about some of the other local races that we were watching in the primary. State Representative Kim Banta lost to her primary challenger. Shane, tell us about the winner in that race.
Yeah, Cole Kuzik. He's been around for a little while. He actually worked for Congressman Massey for a little bit. He's worked for some religious liberties organizations in Frankfort and in Texas. He really got out there and worked hard and got in front of a lot of voters. What I think is interesting about this race is a challenge that incumbents have is you're in Frankfort in the legislative session until mid-April, and you come up for air and you have 30 days to run a race. And losing by only 13 votes, you know, that's really a testament to Representative Banta was doing the job and hard to come home and make the argument for what you're doing while you're doing the job.
Yeah. And how long had she been in Frankfort or had that office?
I think this was only her second or third term.
And yeah. She was elected in a special election in November of 2019.
Okay.
And then had a general election in 2020. But she'd never actually had a primary, hadn't had any opposition in either 2022 or 24. And her district shifted a little bit to become a little bit more, have a little bit more Boone County in it. And Cole grew up in Boone County. So that wasn't an ideal redistricting pivot. And it's in addition to what Shane said about the challenge of the calendar, I think that we see this in the urban areas in Louisville and like Northern Kentucky particularly. Our legislators, when they show up an event, there are other legislators with them. So if you ask the question, who's your state rep? Who's your state senator? You probably can correctly identify a state rep or state senator, but you may not correctly identify which one is yours. Like, for example, where we live out in Boone County, we've been in our house since 2004. I'm on my third state rep district because of redistricting. So the boundaries change. You don't see as much of them. And then they have this calendar. And then Banta had the misfortune of not being as well known because she hadn't had to campaign for it, you know, never having had a primary. Contrast that with Kim Mosier, who also represents, I think her district's entirely Kenton County. Mm-hmm. She had a tough race 2 years ago in a primary, was able to win by around 100 votes or so. Yeah. This time she had a more comfortable win, but she had the good fortune, if you will, of having that big fight 2 years ago and getting out. But she had the same calendar challenge. Mm-hmm. And it's something I was talking to a state senator out in Western Kentucky about that challenge. You know, like, you want to move the primary back? He said, no. but that 1 month turnaround is a challenging. So Cusick was out knocking on doors for
last year.
Yeah.
Wow.
And credit to him for that hard work, and obviously his message resonated with the voters when he interacted with them at the doors.
Yeah. So did any other Republican state lawmakers face tough primary challenges?
Not in Northern Kentucky. There was a tough state Senate race down in southeastern Kentucky between an incumbent state rep who primaried an incumbent state senator. But no, Northern Kentucky, that was Kim Banta, Kim Mosier were the two tough races at the General Assembly level, and one Kim won and the other one did not. Mm-hmm.
Well, then there were the judge executive races. Two incumbents in Boone County and Campbell County lost their primary races, and these were both guys who'd been there for a long, long time. Shane, what do you think happened there?
Well, I think, you know, you had a situation of both of them were there since 98. So they've been there quite a while. Amazing accomplishments, and they've seen a lot of Northern Kentucky evolve. And I think the challenge is when you've got a record like that, over time, you add another 1%. You make somebody mad about this issue. You add another 1% the next year because you did this issue. And so you just build up this base of opposition that eventually kind of overcomes you. And in the case of Judge Pendry, you know, I think—
That's Campbell County.
Of Judge, Campbell County.
Yeah, Steve Pendry. Mm-hmm.
I think that was the more surprising. I think everybody anticipated Judge Moore's race to be aggressive. He's had aggressive primaries as long as I've been involved in politics. And he always squeaks it out. Maybe it's 100 votes, maybe it's 1,000 votes, but he always pulled through. And I think this time it just caught up with him. But Judge Pendry, he was beat by Andy Schaube, who's the mayor of Alexandria. So a well-liked mayor from a really growing part of the county. And there's always tension in areas like Alexandria and South County about, we're developing too fast, we're building too much, there's too much traffic. And Judge Pendry is from Fort Thomas, which is still the most populated city in the county. So I think you're seeing a generational shift in Campbell County demographics starting to shift, along with just generational of the age of the candidates and how long they've been in office.
Yeah, when you see those results and you think these are people who've been in office for 28 years trying to be there for 32 years, I'm reminded when Chet Hand, who's the county commissioner, first-term commissioner, former Boone County Republican Party chair who defeated Judge Moore, he knocked on my door and he said, you know, the message is simple. He's just been there too long. And so that aspect. And then I think in Boone County, you had a lot of questions about growth. The county has grown a lot in population. Think about, you know, all of us growing up. Shane grew up in rural Boone. Where you grew up is still rural.
Yeah.
But the Boone County has transformed over the last 30 years. It started kind of before Gary got there, but just in particular. And so folks are questioning, you know, every time there's a new development now, it seems to be encroaching into an area where there's a lot more objections than maybe that used to be 20, 30 years ago. And so Chet did lean into some of the challenges with growth. Now, the thing that was fascinating, I was in KET Studios on election night, 16 others, so a total of 18 judge executives lost all across the Commonwealth. Now, every race is a little bit different, but that tells you something was in the water, whether this is this voter's angst or whether, a couple of them were in counties that have grown, a few were in counties that had declined. And so managing that decline can be a challenge. But it was clearly something all from the east to the west, we saw incumbent judge executives lose. And for our Cincinnati listeners, a judge executive is like the mayor of the county. You don't have the equivalent. You just have a chair of a commissioner, but this is actually a position for which you're elected. And it's the most powerful local elected official in the county. And these guys had been there. 1998 was a seminal year in Kentucky politics. We had both those guys won, and they were the first. Pendry beat an incumbent. Moore got elected. Republicans kind of took over starting in 1998. So it's an end of an era And these two gentlemen have been incredible leaders for our region, and we owe a debt of gratitude.
And very collaborative. They've
worked closely. Collaborative in the region of Northern Kentucky, collaborative across the river. We had good fortune, and so hopefully their successors will continue that track record.
Yeah. Go ahead, Shane.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting about all 18 of them. I can't help but think, you know, there was a surge in turnout statewide. And I had talked to a lot of candidates like, oh, what do I expect turnout to be? How do we figure this out? I was like, we don't have anything since 2010 where we had an open Senate seat. We had congressional seats to really surge. And so you add that with, you know, President Trump endorsed a lot of candidates across the state, Lexington, Northern Kentucky, the Senate race. And he motivates a lot of drain the swamp attitude. And I can't help but think the voters that were showing up, you know, being told, send Thomas Massey home, support my guy for Senate, support my guy in Lexington. They're also thinking, well, if you've been in there for a while, you're the problem. Hmm. And I think they probably got caught up in a little bit of that drain the swamp attitude.
Yeah, we haven't talked much or at all really about the United States Senate race, but both parties had primaries that were pretty that were contested. The Republican primary ended up not being all that close, but it was pretty well contested until the last month or so. The Democrats did go up into election night with Charles Booker defeating Amy McGrath, but you had all that intensity. And turnout was, you know, Secretary of State thought the turnout would be about 20% statewide, and that includes independents and nonpartisans who couldn't vote. So it's a little bit misleading. But it ended up being like 26% using that same definition. So higher than folks anticipated, much higher up here in Northern Kentucky because of the congressional race. But you could see the impact of local races. Campbell and Boone had higher turnouts than Kenton, where you had some competitive local, you know, two county commissioner races, a sheriff's race, but you didn't have the judge executive ran unopposed. I'm sure Chris Knockelman is very happy to have run unopposed in this environment. But we did have higher turnout, and I think Shane's right. It's pretty clear that those extra voters that came in were inclined to throw out some of the bums, if you will, at the local level. It's interesting it didn't happen in the state legislature, because really you had one Republican state rep, one Democratic state rep losing. Otherwise, it was a status quo race and outcomes.
Yeah. Well, do you the two winners of the Campbell County and the Boone County judge executive races, Shane? We've got Mayor Schaubel, who unseated Judge Pendry in Campbell County, and then Commissioner Hand unseated Judge Moore in Boone County. Do those two challengers have anything in common, politically speaking, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think they're very unique, different races. You know, Commissioner Hand, he was the chairman of the Republican Party in Boone and has really been a grassroots organizer over there. And Schaubel, you know, is kind of an upstart. I think he was on council before he was the mayor. So just a local government. I don't see any political alignment. I think it was just happenstance that they both ran and won in the same cycle.
Would you say maybe the growth issue a little bit could have cut across that?
Growth issue, but I don't think Campbell's got the same fire in that fight. You know, you have that across all three of the counties in Northern Kentucky. You've got these bands of urban, suburban, rural. And there's just been that tension my whole life. One of my earliest memories was sitting through a planning and zoning meeting at Ryle, first year it was opened, learning about how 536 might be expanded. Well, it's still slowly being expanded, but there's always this push and pull. And I think we're seeing it elsewhere as growth is creeping out where we've been a largely rural state for so long.
Yeah. Well, okay. Trey, you were talking about how these New York Times reporters were asking you, what makes Northern Kentucky different? What's going on there? What do you think these results say about the Republican Party in Northern Kentucky? Is it more MAGA? Is it less Liberty Wing? Or is that an oversimplification? Can you read anything from these results?
I do think that Northern Kentucky probably does have a little bit more than its fair share of kind of the Liberty Republicans. And some of that is that before Republicans took over to the majority in Northern Kentucky and statewide, there were these two types of Republicans. There were the kind of the in Kenton County, they referred them to the highway. So think of Dixie Highway, Fort Mitchell, the forts, enjoyed that sort of area, was more of your Chamber of Commerce business leader, more traditional Reagan-type Republicans. But there was always this faction. South end of Campbell County was a good example. South end of, you know, kind of rural Boone County, of folks who were more populist, who were more, you know, government stay out of my life. This is why I live in—
More kind of libertarian.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think we just have a little bit more of that in our three counties. And so as the party has grown, you're naturally going to develop factions. And so I think we've seen a little bit of that. And with the emergence of Paul and Massey on the scene, you had champions for those Liberty folks to organize, to motivate, to inspire, and to groom. You know, if you, they could go out and recruit folks and give them pointers. And so I think that's why Northern Kentucky might be a little bit different. But it's at the end of the day, these are just – this is the way the Republican Party looks. And so you, the battles of the different factions, no different than the Democrats have their battles.
Yeah. Shane, do you have any thoughts on what these results could mean for Northern Kentucky as a whole and the direction of the region? We talked about how collaborative Gary Moore and Steve Pendry have been both in Northern Kentucky and even across the river. Do you think there's any message or anything to be learned from all that?
I don't think there's any inherent message. I think this is more a sign of the times. It's a natural evolution as our region is evolving. I mean, you know, think a generation ago, CVG was a runway for the military to use during World War II. And now think of the hub that it is. Oh my
gosh, that's quite a way to put it, yeah.
And so things are evolving. The party is evolving nationally and locally. Our local elected officials are evolving. You know, you're seeing similar conversations happening in the Maysville community as the data center conversations happening there. Carrollton, about what development looks like for the future, where 30, 40 years ago, nobody's talking about locating North American Stainless down there or having these big hubs. So I think we're going to continue to see evolution, but I think this was kind of the water over the dam of, yes, we are changing as a region. Yes, we are going to look different. But the fundamentals of Northern Kentucky being a suburb of Cincinnati, a partner with our friends in the north, but also strongly rooted in Kentucky, I think that's not going to change.
Okay. Well, I have been talking with FBT Gibbons partner and former Kentucky Secretary of State Trey Grayson and president and founder of Roebling Solutions and chair of the Kent County Republican Party, Shane Noem. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Up next, a new effort to give more students access to musical instruments. This is Cincinnati Edition.